it's time for our audience to come back to order and for us to begin the second half of this discussion tonight. We'll wait for everyone to come in and get your place, and we'll be ready to begin again. In just a moment, Mr. Reeves will come back to the podium and will deliver his second 30-minute speech, and that will be followed by Mr. Weatherly with a second 30-minute speech, and then we will conclude the evening with a prayer by Brother Kevin Sams. I believe a difference between Mr. Weatherly and me, we both love our wives. But my screensaver on my computer is my grandchildren. So that that tells you a difference between Mr. Weatherly and me. Bruce.
I would tell Mr. Weatherly, be careful about making fun of your chart man. That can get you into a lot of trouble, I assure you. You're welcome. I guess we're not the same height, are we? Oh, that was for you. I want to, 3:13, go back over my questions for Mr. Weatherly. I am troubled by some of his answers. On number one, was the Spirit committed into the hands of the Father in Luke 23:46 and the soul of Acts 2:31 divine? He defined that Spirit as the Spirit of life. So that would make us question, is he denying the full humanity of the Son? So the Spirit of life was committed in the hands of the Father. So what died for us was breath in a body. Did breath in a body atone the sins of the world? Is that what the book of Hebrews teaches us? And then, as we move on, regarding the prayers, and we're going to get back to this in just a moment, regarding the prayers somehow ungodding Jesus. If God prayed to God, somehow one of those persons cannot be God. You know, ladies and gentlemen, equality in nature does not dismiss the notion of submission. And if you have any question about that, you might want to talk to your wife about it. My wife is equal to me in her nature. She's as much human as I am, but she submits to me. So the notion that if Jesus or the Son submits to the Father, that somehow that means he cannot be God and do so, is a denial of the sacrifice I believe he made and what we read from Philippians, the second chapter. And so, are we being told that the Son is only human? I think it's pretty clear that's what we're being told. That the Son, distinct from the Father, is just the flesh, just the humanity. And so our problem is not whether or not the Son is human, but is he only human? Now, Number four, turn your Bibles to John 16 and verse 13. You really didn't answer it when you went through it the first time and kind of gave us a bunch of gobbledygook about the miraculous gifts. John 16, 13. Let's go over this one more time. John 16, 13. However, when he, the Spirit of truth, that's the Holy Spirit, has come, he will not guide you into all truth. Now, I don't know if you all followed Mr. Weatherly, but I would imagine it was pretty tough when he was trying to explain this passage away. John 16 and verse 13, howbeit when he, the Spirit of truth, has come, he will not guide you into all truth. He said he didn't like that New King James, I guess New American Standard Bible rendering. That's okay. I like the old King James pretty good on this one. He says, howbeit when he, the Spirit of truth, has come, he will guide you into all truth, for he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will tell you things to come. Now, the oneness Pentecostal position is that the Father is the Spirit, and the Spirit is the Father. Now, again, we want to know by whose authority would He speak. According to Mr. Weatherly, He spoke by His own authority. We're going to get around to that again. Now, regarding the questions that he gave me, I feel like there was some misrepresentation of my answers. Can we pull that up for y'all? Or you got your PowerPoint off? Number, that's okay, I don't need it. I'll take care of it. In John 17:1, in John 17:1, what does the phrase "the hour is come" refer to? Now, I made the point here that it was the time for him to suffer and die. And I believe he was misrepresenting what I was saying about verse 5. And I'm going to get back to verse 5 in just a moment. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and get to it. This is his 136, I believe. Can you go to your 136? Turn your Bibles over to John 17:5. I think we're missing the point here. I tell you what, just blank that out. Just hit B on y'all's charts, Jason. Oh, hold my time, whoever's on. Okay, here we are. Yes, the hour is come. Glory and glorify can have some different definitions, can have reference here. That you were there. Leave it there. Don't move. Can have some different definitions, but the context bears out which one we're talking about. Now, what he wants to do is take glorify in John 17 in verses 22 and 23 and equate it to the glory of John 17:5. Mr. Weatherly, that's not going to work. Let's just study the Bible here. In John 17:5, I want you to notice that the glory in this particular verse, Jesus had in eternity, He did not have now, and it eventually would be restored. He did not have it at this time. Now, John 17 and verse 22, "And the glory which Thou gavest Me," this glory, He has right now. The glory of John 17:5, He does not have right now at the time of this being spoken. And so in John 17 and in verse 22, you'll notice there, He says, "And the glory which Thou gavest Me, I have given them." This is glory He had right now, that they may be one. And you might want to look at this part of the passage too. "That they may be one, even as We are one. I in them and Thou in Me, that they may be made perfect in one, that the world may know that Thou hast sent Me." The glory of these verses is not the glory of John 17:5. This glory He had at this time, the glory of John 17:5, He did not, and prayed that it would be restored. So you might want to think about that. On the question number 3 here, do the personal pronouns he, his, she, hers, and thou always refer to a separate distinct person, I think Mr. Weddleton misrepresented my answer. I said it can be used figuratively, but then we went over there to Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 5, and I didn't apply that to Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 5. He wants to take me and make that figurative, and then only the humanity there that was sacrificed for us, only a man died on the cross according to that position. And then, number 5 here, which person in the Godhead is Jehovah? Deuteronomy 6 and verse 4. Go to chart 14. Echad here is being used. It's a compound unity in Deuteronomy 6. The Lord our God is one Lord. It doesn't say one person. And there's a big difference. They shall be one flesh, Genesis 2:24. Genesis 34:16. We will become one people. The Lord our God is one Lord. Now I want to tell you something. There is a word that always would refer to singularity in the Hebrew, but that's not this word. So that's something you might want to think about. And let's go back and talk about this. Because two things have a parallel doesn't mean that they're identical. And we were talking about the divine nature and human nature and that kind of thing. I understand there's some difference with God and man, but we were illustrating the point. But I want to show you something. Mr. Weatherly's idea, he's equating, it seems, persons with a polytheistic view of God or gods. The fact is, you have three human persons, but only one humanity. Three human persons, only one humanity. Three divine persons and one deity. Now that's the parallel there. And he talked about those apples and oranges. I kind of like the illustration if you hadn't been fussing at me. But he talked about those apples and oranges. Listen. One apple hood, and he might have a point. To get outside of that would be outside of one fruit. You'd have to have another fruit. Apple hood. Three apples, three distinct persons, one apple hood. He's going to have to get a banana in there somewhere. Now that's something worthy of you thinking about. And he brought up my wife. You better believe if I was married to another woman, she'd be upset. But we're missing here something. Godhood is equivalent not to wife. Godhood is equivalent to womanhood. Godhood is equivalent to womanhood. A person is equal to woman. Now then, he needs to figure out what he's going to do with that. All right. Let's move. Number 10. We're still back on the same issues. Mr. Weatherly is arguing that on the cross, only a human died. Now, I want to make clear the biblical definition of death. When you and I die, Mr. Weller's admitted to this, we're not annihilated. Our spirit departs from our body, according to James chapter 2. We're asking, did deity suffer for us? Did deity condescend? We read from Philippians 2, and that's exactly what we found there. Tell you what, Don, go to 139. Let's talk about John 17:5 some more. It seems to me that Mr. Weatherly's argument here is that glory was this plan. You know, there wasn't an actual conscious existence and distinction between the Father and Jesus. It was this plan. It was this unfulfilled plan. I want you to notice that this is the UPCI version of John chapter 17 and verse 5. And now, O Father, glorify the fulfilled plan together with yourself with the glory which the unfulfilled plan had with you before the world was. Now, let's see how that works out. First of all, we just have a plan and an idea becoming flesh. The unfulfilled plan had more glory than the plan while it was being fulfilled, according to him. In John 17:5, he says, restore unto me or give me the glory that I had with thee before the world was. He said, well, that was just the unfulfilled plan of God, and he's asking for that glory. Well, wait a minute. Does the unfulfilled plan have more glory than the fulfilled plan? If you're building a house and your plans had more glory than when you're building the house, you might want to get somebody else to build your house. That doesn't make much sense. 229. Mr. Weatherly is just flat wrong about this statement, through whom also he made the worlds. His view, I think, is that God created the worlds in view of the Son that would come later on. That really does tear down the real point Paul is making in Hebrews chapter 1 and verses 2 and 3. His point is the deity of the Son and that the Son was involved in creating the worlds. That's his point. And so he says, through whom also he made the worlds. Again, a primary preposition denoting the channel of an act. Let's keep moving on here a little bit. Hebrews 1:8 and 9, 2:42. Mr. Weatherly says, well, I don't have a problem with the Son being God. I don't have a problem with saying the Son is God. But boy, he wanted to throw out the minute, and trust me, it is minute scholarship out there that might grab hold of this idea that this really doesn't mean the Son is God. But then he said, but I don't have a problem with the Son being God. Well, here's the fact. His position is that the Son, distinct from the Father, is not God. This passage says that the Son is God. Now, He said it. We're going to notice a few things in a minute. Go to 58. Go to 58. Mr. Weatherly, you picked... Well, you kind of picked two crosses here, to be honest with you. You were talking about... We were talking about who prayed and who suffered and who died. And getting all through all that, He ended up talking about how... Well, the flesh did. Now, that's just the body. Maybe you want to say breath in a body. Breath in a body atoned the sins of the world. But when we got through all of that, Mr. Weatherly told us that it was really number two. As far as who suffered and who prayed and who died, it was only a human. And that's why this issue is important. Only a human suffered on the cross. Mr. Weatherly, go to 71. Go to 71. It says the Son is not only human. But this, when He's explaining things, is what He says. He said it tonight. He said the divine nature is God the Father, and when we speak of the humanity, we are speaking of the Son. The only sense in which our Oneness Pentecostal friends say the Son is God is in the sense that the Father indwelt Him or possessed Him. They do not believe that the Son Himself is actually God. 72. Mr. Weatherly, you said there is a separation in the Godhead, separation of natures, not persons. And tonight, you were saying the same stuff. That it was only the flesh. Was it only a body? I think you're telling me there's two spirits in there. I mean, I think that's what you're telling us. That you have the divine spirit, and that's the Father, and the Son is the human spirit and a human body. And so we have only a human praying, only a human suffering, only a human dying. We're going to move on, Don. Let's go back to 182, and let's study some more. I'll tell you what, hang on. Go to 81. Go to 81. On that cross, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? I believe He told us that the Jesus in this context is only human. Because the Jesus in this context that cried out here, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani, that is, my God, why have you forsaken me? What did God offer? A body? Flesh? Clearly the body and flesh were involved. But the Spirit departed from that body. Is the me of this text created? I think that's what we were told. Now let's go back to Philippians 2. No, I tell you what. Slow down. Let's go to 57. Let's talk about Luke 23:46 a little bit more. Luke 23:46. Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. Mr. Weatherly has reduced that spirit to just breath in a body. But here's the definition of Thayer's Greek English Lexicon on page 520 of spirit. A spirit, simple essence, devoid of all or at least all grosser matter, and possessed of the power of knowing, desiring, deciding, and acting. Are we being told that the Spirit that was committed in the hands of the Father was just breath? Chart 56. A spirit as an independent being, in contrast to a being who can be perceived by the physical senses. 60. I think, again, we're on number one, number two, somewhere in here, a body with breath. Dr. Bernard, Oneness Pentecostal advocate, pretty much says it's a human spirit and a human body. He's not really picking number three here. He told me he was going to, but he's not picking number three. Now, how is it that only a human spirit and a human body is going to atone the sins of the world? Let's look at Philippians 2, 182. And let's study this. Who suffered? Who suffered? Who prayed? Who died? We've already illustrated that the fact is that God limited Himself, humbled Himself, and He doesn't un-God Himself any more than a wife when she submits to her husband, causes herself not to truly be human. There's a difference in function and the essence of who you are. Have this mind in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, counted not the being on an equality with God a thing to be grasped or clutched to. Now he was trying to tell us verse 6, I guess this whole thing is incarnate. The whole thing is incarnate. But this text clearly is dealing with the pre-incarnate individual that we know as Jesus, who existing in the form of God counted not the being on an equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself. Now here's what I want to ask you. When did he empty himself? Because I don't think Mr. Weatherly really thinks that the Father emptied himself of anything. I think he's up in heaven and down on earth all at the same time. And the Son, he's only got as the humanity, so he never did have anything to limit. But emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, being made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, becoming obedient unto death, yea, the death of the cross. 191. Again, notice the text. He existed. He existed in the form of God. This is pre-incarnate. He hadn't limited himself yet. He was equal with God. For Jesus to exist in the form of God and to be equal with God, there had to be more than one divine person. Now, I think he's trying to say that this word equal just means identical. And he talked about, I guess, isos here. Well, let's look at how that word is used. The idea of being equal with God. Equal with God. What does that mean? He said, well, that doesn't mean there's more than one divine person. Well, let's look here. You know, over here in Matthew 20 and verse 12, saying, these last men have worked only 1 hour, and you made them equal to us. Equal to us. Doesn't equal demand more than one thing? He's been made equal to us. 185. Mark chapter 14, for many bore false witness against him, but their testimonies did not agree. Same word, did not agree. But not even then did their testimony agree. Does that take more than one? No. When does this word just mean one? Whenever. The term equal requires us to understand that there are at least two things of equal value or nature. Luke 6 and verse 34. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners, receive as much back. I think we're starting to get the picture. We could go on. Look at all of these. You can look at any of them. I don't care. 189. He uses the word equal. This is equal to that. This is equal to that. Mr. Weatherly has it be the only thing distinct from the Father is the idea of a plan. It's just an idea. That's all it is. It's just an idea. And yet John 17:5, and he's not going to get rid of John 17:5 with John 17:22 and 23. John 17:5, that glory Jesus did not have while he was in the flesh as the divine Son of God. It was going to be given to him again. He had had it before. The glory he speaks of in John 17:22 and 23, he had at that time and gave to them. It's being used in two different ways. 200. Now, I want you to note Philippians 2. And again, we're asking who prayed, who suffered, who sacrificed. Can only a human atone the sins of the world? Was there any sense in which God humbled Himself and experienced this suffering? Look at the context. It says, existing, so He existed, counted not, so He was able to consider, being on an equality with God. But then it says, but He emptied Himself, taking the form of a servant, being made in the likeness of men, being found in fashion as a man, He humbled Himself, becoming obedient unto death. Now, existing, He did that in eternity. He did that in eternity. He existed in eternity. He was able to consider this, and He was on an equality with God, and He made Himself of no reputation, and took upon Him the form of a servant. Now, I'd like to know, 203. How much time, Sean? When Mr. Weatherly is, and he's using these words, and I understand, and that's fine, but we would like to know exactly what he means as we proceed. When we talk about divine nature and human nature and who prayed and who suffered and who died, or do you mean, Mr. Weatherly, just a fleshly body? Do you mean, when you use the term fleshly body and human nature and humanity and human side, do you mean 204 just a human body? Do you mean a human body with a human spirit? Do you mean God in the flesh, Jesus Christ? Now, you told us that God can't pray, and I guess God can't suffer, and God didn't limit Himself enough to experience death. So I guess it'd have to be up here around this second option, a human body with a human spirit. And that's what prayed. Now, is that an incarnation? Or is that a possession? Is that an incarnation? Or is this just an indwelling? Did God suffer for us? Did God humble Himself? Philippians 2 clearly is teaching that God humbled Himself. He can do that and still be God. Mr. Weatherly understands the idea of God limiting Himself. When talking about Calvinism, he believes God in the Old Testament limited, there were times when He limited His omniscience, chose not to know a thing, but He was still God. So the point in Philippians 2 is that God humbled Himself and suffered for us. But that demands more than one person in the Godhead. And we are interested as well in John 14, 15, and 16 as we look at John chapters 14, 15, and 16, and we were presenting that to you, and Mr. Weatherly really tried to completely dismiss all of those distinct personal pronouns and all of that kind of thing. You know, as we look at that, is the Lord trying to deceive us? Is He trying to fool us in John chapters 14, 15, and 16, talking about another comforter and He will come and I will send Him to you? By the way, I will go to the Father. Did we hear anything about that? I will go to the Father. If I there that will go to the Father, and the Father's the divine Spirit, if we're being told that's the humanity, that's the one who will send the Spirit, who Miss Weller tells us is the Father. So do we have humanity sin and deity? And we have John 16 and verse 13 talking about the Spirit not speaking by His own authority, 198. So here we are, who existing in the form of God, counted not the being on an equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied Himself. When did He do that idea? I believe that's the incarnation, that He emptied Himself and took the form of servant. When did He take that? When did He take that? If verse 6 is incarnation, no, it's before. It's before. Now, we can talk about all these things. Go to 58. 58. Deity separated from that body, and deity sacrificed Himself for us. Mr. Weatherly, I don't think you picked number three. You told me you were going to pick number three, but I don't think you picked number three. I think you picked number two. Only a human body and a human spirit suffer. Is that what you believe? That's the consequence. Because you see, if when Jesus says, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit, that's divine, and he's speaking to the Father who's divine, Mr. Weatherly knows. He knows we have more than one person than God in, so he has to reduce and redefine who the Son is. Oh, I believe the Son is human. But Mr. Weatherly and our Oneness Pentecostal friends are denying the totality of who the Son is distinct from the Father. Thank you for your good attention.